This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
Welcome to the National Museum and to the Australian premiere of this remarkable film, In the Shadow of Eden, by writer, photographer, filmmaker and artist Rachel Romero. I'm Jay Arthur, and for the last 2 years, I've been working on the project Inside Life in Children's Homes and Institutions. It was funded by Prime Minister Rudd in his apology, his national apology, to the forgotten Australians and former child migrants in 2009 to tell the story of life inside children's homes and institutions. This project has manifested in two ways, in a blog, which some of you may have seen on our website, and an exhibition, which some of you also have been to visit. But both these projects are doing the same thing. Both these manifestations are doing the same thing. They're making a space. They're making a space in history for stories that our history has obscured, has hidden. It is making a space for the feelings of those who are children in homes and institutions to be felt by the rest of the community. It's making a listening space so we can hear those stories that have been disbelieved, ignored, or silenced. Tonight, we're hearing one of those stories in this remarkable film. Shortly, I'll hand over to Adele Chenoweth, who's also been on the team for the Inside project. But I'd like to tell you that after the film, we'll be crossing live to upstate New York to talk with Rachel Romero herself. She's most generously agreed to talk with us at this time, which is actually, I think, 2:30 a.m. American time, which is makes her doubly generous, I think. So at that time, you'll be able to have opportunity to talk with her about this film. So now I'll hand over to Adele to introduce the film to you.
Thank you, Jay. It's a pleasure to present this film this evening, which premiered at the Yale Centre for British Art in September 2003, where it won a short film prize from Film Fest New Haven. Since then, it has screened at the Cleveland International Film Festival, the Santa Fe Film Festival, Moondance, Boulder, Colorado, where it won the Spirit Award for Short Documentary, and the Full Frame Documentary Film Festival in Durham, North Carolina, where with the help of the New York Times and won the Critics Award for 2004, and that board of critics included Martin Scorsese, Jonathan Demme, Ken Burns and Barbara Koppel. And so it's among six shorts chosen for 100 groundbreaking documentaries available now on DVD, full-frame documentary shorts. And In the Shadow of Eden is in volume four, but we're very pleased to be able to present it on the big screen tonight. Ironically, given all these accolades in the States, it has been consistently rejected for inclusion in film festivals in Sydney, Adelaide and Melbourne. So we can see the rationale for the term forgotten Australians. But it hasn't escaped the attention of the National Museum of Australia, which sees good social history. And it's therefore with great pride and pleasure that we here at the National Museum of Australia present the first Australian screening of In the Shadow of Eden. Thank you. I was growing up in a very different environment, but in the same suburb. And I think this is something that
strikes us all why the history of the Forgotten Australians is important to all of us, because it happened in our streets and in our suburbs. Would you please give a very warm welcome to survivor and interdisciplinary artist Rachel Romero. Thanks for being with us, Rachel. Do you want to have a whinge first about the ungodly hour that we've got you up to be here this evening?
Well, I have to say that my cat is very discombobulated.
is he here? Is your cat there? Can you, you show us? Hello! There you are. Beautiful. So you spoke a bit...
circles.
Gorgeous. You spoke a bit at the end of the film about what prompted you to make it. Do you want to talk about more about that, why you chose to make In the Shadow of Eden?
Well, I think it chose to make me, because I didn't really intend... When I went back to Australia, I borrowed a video camera, because I had a sense that there were things that I had to record, and I was writing a book at the time. And so I, of course, thought, well, I can do all this research and so forth. And then I got all this, everything I needed, and it was also visual, and including mm-hmm. my own visual work that my father had squirreled away from when I was a kid. And I was winnowing through it, and I was looking at the footage that he had shot and so forth, and I still didn't get it that I was making a movie. I really didn't know how to make a movie, actually, and I was sort of doing things with it and throwing up and, you know, yeah. so forth. I knew that there was immense power in this, the stuff, and that there was something inchoate that I had to figure out and understand. And in that process, over that process, I started making a film for my own understanding, and then I started making it for others, thinking of myself as a young person, what I would have liked to have known.
Mm-hmm. And what sort of responses did you get to the film?
I've gotten a lot of responses from that audience of those people who were younger, who had that experience and never told anybody and never acknowledged even to themselves until the film broke that open. And of course there are many, whether or not they were incarcerated. Mm. And including those who were incarcerated.
Mm-hmm. And how do you account for the wonderful accolades you've got in the States for the film, and yet the being ignored by Australian film festivals? Did you have any insight as to why that difference in, you know, response?
I think rejected is better.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
In film festivals, I was expecting to be rejected by everybody because I was a novice, and that was the West way it is. You know, an independent filmmaker, you put in your film, and you're lucky if you even get it into a film festival. And the first film festival that it was in, it won a prize, and that just absolutely amazed me. I knew that sending it to Adelaide and was a little close to home, and that I was going to hit a few notes there, but I didn't expect complete and utter mm-hmm. nothing, you know, this complete rejection. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I think perhaps there was a more timid attitude, perhaps.
Mm. Mm. So perhaps it's cultural, but, you know, an extroverted culture versus an introverted culture, but also it's... We know through our own research during this exhibition, you know, the anecdotal evidence that shows that there is an understanding in our culture of members of the stolen generations and, to a certain extent, former child migrants, but to those Australian non-Indigenous children that they're in homes, there seems to be a complete lack of, a less of an understanding. So, well, thank you for letting us show it here at least. So now you spend your time in the Catskill Mountains in your studio and also teaching in New York. Do you want to tell us more about your artwork generally and your other films specifically?
Okay. I've made films since then about artists who are living with autism, who are homeless. I work for many years with artists who are homeless and, still doing their work into their 80s. And I photograph, I draw, I paint, but it all seems to end up in the visual story, which is where I'm most comfortable.
Okay. And we could say, if you would permit, that you're one of the diaspora of those Australians who were institutionalised as children, and as a result of that lack of care, have decided to leave Australia. But since your leaving the Pines and leaving Australia, the Australian government has apologised to forgotten Australians and former child migrants. Do you think as a result of that you would ever return to Australia? Has that changed your view of Australia, given that apology?
The apology was quite a surprise, I must say, a shock to those of us who have lived in so many years and decades of denial from our families and everyone else. In my case, my grandmother was told that I was in a boarding school. How can you... But no, Granny, you just sort of leave it like that and just keep going.
For her to be lied to like that, it's awful.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, how is it? Well, I also felt that being here, I lived upstairs from somebody who was in a Magdalen laundry in Queens at one point in New York. And I went to see the McMullen film of the Magdalen Sisters.
Yeah.
A decade ago, and I was riveted. I was there at the premiere at the Lincoln Film Festival.
Wow.
I just happened to see that it was happening, and I spoke afterwards, and they're in the audience of it was a very big audience, and there were about five people who had been in the laundries in that audience.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So that was amazing for me because I hadn't known. I mean, nobody had even known until that film came out that the Magdalen Laundries were such a worldwide institution and 47 countries.
So, of course, Rachel, as you might be aware, is talking about the film The Magdalene Sisters, the feature film, and set in Ireland. But, of course, it was the same system that was imported to Australia and that Rachel found herself in South Australia. So can you tell us a bit more about the Magdalene justice movement? Because I understand that for former inmates of Magdalene laundries, there is a movement to try and get justice.
There is. There is a website in this country, in the US, and people from around the world contributing to it, from Canada, the United Kingdom, and Ireland. And of course, in Ireland, it's gotten more publicity because of the film, and there is the misconception that it was just in Ireland. And of course, as you know, it was right down your street, and in Abbotsford, and in Hobart. And it's amazing as I learn more that and meet others from the diaspora that our stories, when it comes to the institution themselves, that there was a kind of a cookie-cutter institution. Everything was the same. I mean, the days were the same, the bells were the same, our experience of being rebellious and then suddenly shocked into a kind of dumb terror that in many ways never left us in some aspects.
So what needs to be done, do you think, to right the wrongs that were done in the past, that still live, as you describe in the films, with you, with survivors? Because we're aware here at the museum that this is not just about telling the story, the social history, that there is a sense for people who endured this of a need for justice. So what can be done to right those wrongs, and what can people in the audience do to help to get justice?
Well, certainly education, which is what you're been tasked to do at the museum and have done very well. I haven't been able to see the exhibit, of course, because I'm so far away, although I have seen the video, and those of us who are elsewhere have looked at it and wept. I didn't expect to, but I did, and it still carries that with us. And it's important to have. It's sort of like breaking the bubble of denial to have that. My own family wouldn't acknowledge it even now, and I wonder, you know, if that a group of people that are in such denial will ever see or hear of the show at all, or maybe just keep their hands over their ears and eyes for the rest of their lives. But I think that, you know, the human rights laws have been put in place now, but I'm not sure that we can, as long as there's this denial, that we can rest assured that children are not experiencing another form of denial about bad behavior on the part of their caregivers and wrong policy. So that we have to really keep educating and looking closely at that.
Point taken, Rachel. Thank you. I'll hand it over to the audience if you'd like to ask some questions. And I just ask that you use the microphone, because we are recording this, so we need to use the microphone so that your question will be heard. And before we do, to let you know that if you would like to read more about Rachel's personal history and see more of her art, and in fact, and indeed the testimonies of other forgotten Australians and former child migrants, if you can log on to our exhibition website, if you just Google Inside Life in Children's Homes. So we'll hand it over.
I would like to just say something to that, if I might, that blog that Inside was such an amazing thing for thousands of us, and we could read each other's life histories and contribute and talk back and forth to one another, and I know that I'm not alone in my gratitude to you, Adele, for being the curator of that. And we also were kind of aghast and alarmed that blog was has been frozen and is now a relic of the exhibit. And when the show opened, then so many people will be coming and wanting to participate in it and wanting to deal with their very big emotions on the subject, those who experienced it and those who are just beginning to understand that it happened. So I would hope that somebody in the funding zone would pick that up and resuscitate it so that it would continue at least for another few years, because I think it had made an extraordinary impact internationally.
Thank you. Thanks, Rachel. Questions?
Hi, Rachel. I'm a forgotten Australian. My name's Wilma Roth. I suffer with dissociative disorder and post-traumatic stress disorder through child abuse. And you said that, you know, you step out of your body. Can you tell me, are you scared of stepping out of that body in what will come up for you? Do you understand
what I'm
saying?
Am I scared? No, I'm not scared anymore. I would have been if I hadn't sort of swam around in my fear for decades and confronted it. I would probably be extremely shattered by it if I had suppressed it. One of my friends in my internet friends who was in the convent saw the ABC footage we sent one another, and she said, well, I was shaken and I wept also, but at least I'm not numb. I used to be numb and now I'm not numb. So I can say that I still get scared, but I'm not afraid of confronting my own fear.
Thank you. Thank you. Other questions?
Thank you.
Hello, Rachel. Do you know anything of the blood sister that was depicted in your... excuse me. The blood sister that was shown in your film and is depicted in the exhibition here from the laundry days?
Lily, yes.
Lily.
Yes.
Have you ever had any contact since?
Oh, I wish. You know, what happened was that we had our names changed and we lived under the rule of silence, and we didn't know where we were going when we left, and we all left at different times because we had to be in there at least a year, but each one came at a different time, so that there was this constant coming and going that was unacknowledged in the institution itself. And we, of course, wanted to see one another, but at the same time had no way of getting in touch with one another, you know, in those days. And I was always hoping to find various people, and I tried, but being so far away... since I left as still a teenager, and I, you know, we didn't have Google in those days, and people, of course, women very often changed their surnames, and we didn't know each other's surnames necessarily either in the Pines. I know Lily's surname, but I haven't found her. But maybe now there'll be somebody who knows her, and I will.
Thank you. Great question. Anybody else? We just have to allow our one Luke to run up the stairs with the microphone.
Hello again. You mentioned just earlier that your own family was in denial. I presume by that you meant your Australian family who went through the same. Same childhood as you did.
So the question is, how can they? Is the question how could Rachel's? The question is, how could your family be in denial of what happened to you when, you know, they were in the same house, the same family?
Well, families can be very dysfunctional. I have a brother who was 6 years younger who had no idea. I was close to him, and then I was gone. And he was just very... He was quite young. And he somehow, I think... I'm going to speculate here, felt that I had abandoned him. And so we've never lived together since. And so he's just put me aside in terms of his feelings. And wouldn't, as an adult, you know, seeing him all years and years later as my father was dying and so forth, there was no opening in his emotional life for my suffering.
So we can see how, you know, the damage that's really done to all the family, that you were seen as abandoning him when you had no choice.
Yes, exactly. I was basically, from my experience, kidnapped and taken into a page out of Dickens and then spat back out again in the 60s in another world, which had accrued more freedom while I was gone in a place of no freedom at all.
Culture shock, I'm sure.
Yes.
Other questions? Sorry, Rachel, go on.
Just the rest of my family have never wanted me to even bring it up. I tried to bring it up with my mother, and she threatened a heart attack discussing it.
So helps us perhaps understand the courage to make that film, to speak out in that way. Other questions?
Oh, hello, Rachel. It was very moving. Your film was very moving. I was very thinking about the courage that you showed in leaving Australia and going to all the places that you did, and I wonder if you feel that the love and the compassion that you so obviously have showed to so many people throughout your life have helped you overcome a lot of the despair that you would otherwise be feeling at this stage in your life that many other people feel. You know, that you've turned a lot of the inside trauma and shown all that love to other people. Does that make sense to you? That came very, very strongly across how much you've given to others, despite the fact that you weren't given anything really yourself as a young person. You've been able to give so much to other people.
And so the question, what would you like?
Oh, well,
Rachel?
I was just saying, do you think that what you have shown to other people has helped you to overcome and
Thank
become
you.
The person you are now?
Great question.
I think that other people have helped me to overcome. I think that other people were part of my healing process. I could love others before I could love myself, way before I could love myself. It was having compassion for myself which helped me be able to really love other people. That was a lifetime work. I was quite numb as a young woman and into my adulthood. And even as I was trying to help others, I think I wasn't as helpful as I could have been if I'd had compassion for myself earlier. But I had a lot of anger at an injustice that propelled me. And as my my dear husband, who is no longer living, would say when I get feisty, well, you wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for that feistiness.
Yeah. Yeah, wonderful observation. Yes, we've got a question. Heidi's running up to the back with the microphone. Rachel.
Hi, Rachel. I'm Melissa, and I very much appreciate you sharing your story with us. What I think bothered me the most about the film is the fact that I could very easily have put a different narration over that, your childhood, your childhood films, and said, this is me having a wonderful, happy time, because because it was just so... It feels so hidden to me that it just seemed, if there hadn't been such a sorry tale over the top of it, you could have put an equally happy tale over the top of it, if you know what I mean, with the greatest respect. I suppose my question is, how do you unearth this sort of thing? Because to the outside world, that viewing could have just been seen as a happy childhood.
It's true, and we can look back on our lives and fantasize about what we would have liked, and a lot of that goes on in families, I think, where the if you can't acknowledge the things that have gone wrong, very radically wrong. And you put them under the rug, they're going to bulge up and you're going to trip on them throughout your life. I mean, these things will emerge, they will show themselves, but some of us clamp down hard on that fantasy and grit our teeth and smile instead of screaming.
Thanks for sharing your strength.
Mm. One last question? No? I've noticed the drawing in the background there, Rachel. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a drawing of the mangle, and that was a product of meeting others who perhaps not so visual in their expression as I am, and realizing that people didn't really know what it was like to be inside that very loud laundry.
Can you explain what a mangle is, Rachel?
The mangle is this this great big machine that we had to feed the hot sheets into. It was roaring. It was loud. Women had their hands mangled by these mangles, by getting caught on the sheets. And that was the daily life in the laundry, extremely loud inside a tin shed in the heat. And anyway, so I started to make a whole series of just drawings of what happened. It came out in a kind of a almost childlike way, these drawings. They're kind of primitive. And that was the age, I suppose, of my memory. And at this moment, I'm working on making an animated film. I've decided to make it animated.
Wow.
On this subject, because I want to also deal with just what actually the audience has been talking about tonight, is that while we who saw ourselves as rebel children were suddenly stunned into working in a place like this and became very deadpan in our emotions and internalized, we also had an imaginative life.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
we had dreams still, and as an artist, I can show what we experienced on the outer life and the inner life in an animated film. I've got to learn how to do it yet, but I will. And
I'm sure you will.
Yes.
And we look forward to that. So just to remind you, Inside Life in Children's Homes, if you want to read more. Also, Rachel Romero's website, rachelromero.com. And also justice for former inmates of Magdalene Laundries, the magdalenelaundries.com website. So,
and justice for the Magdalene Laundries, yeah, yes.
Yes. So would you, thank you very much for coming tonight and sharing more. Yes, Heidi.
I've had an idea while we've been sitting here. Rachel can see you and you can see Rachel, but Rachel can't see everyone in the room.
All right, we're going to turn you around.
With the magic of television, I'm going to make Diego turn the camera around. Would everyone like to say hello and wave to Rachel? Because she can't see you. Well, she can't see you yet. She can't see you until Diego turns the camera around. Hang on, someone's got a knife. Isn't that what you want to hear? I do apologise. Sorry, Rachel. Clearly I'm being a goose. There we go. Can you see everyone, Rachel? Everyone wave at Rachel.
Oh, that's very sweet.
So now you know who you got up for, Rachel, or stayed up for. Would you please join me in thanking and Rachel Romero for being here this evening. Thanks, Rachel. And thank you so much for coming. Thank you. Good night. Thanks.
Thank you, Adele. Thank you, Museum 2.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.